So all along, these teachers whose
confidence...
The teachers
were working with us, and they were smiling, and they were friendly, and we were partying with them. I couldn't believe that they had all acted this way and thought that we were spies.
Mm-hmm. All along.
All along. And then I got to thinking, these people are used to this in their own society. I mean, corruption, this sort of thing, it's everyday life. It hurt me at the time to think that they thought that, I guess, but then what else were they to think? They didn't believe, they couldn't understand what a volunteer was, that I discussed earlier.
Yes.
They couldn't, oh, come on. You know,
you're not doing this.
You're not doing this for fun, or you're not doing
this. This is not
out funsies. Of the goodness of your heart.
Yeah, you're a rich American. You should be home making money.
The concept of volunteerism, I think, was kind of foreign to them, maybe. And the culture is very family oriented. We're used to doing things maybe for people other than our own families, and maybe that wasn't something that they understood. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's a Confucian society.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't go much beyond family.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They probably also didn't believe that you only made $80 a month.
Probably not. No.
But you must be getting something salted away.
No, the Vietnamese. When you would meet somebody new, had a standard set of questions they would ask. Are you married?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd say no. Well, do you have a live-in mistress?
Okay.
These are perfect strangers.
Yeah.
How much money do you make?
Uh-huh.
How old are you? You know, mm-hmm. things that are... We don't ask here. We don't ask, go up to somebody and say, how much money do you make? I mean, that's...
Or do you have a...
You don't have a mistress.
You have a mistress.
Right.
Do you have a kept woman?
Yes, yes, yes. And so you, after a while, you got used to those and you learned how to answer them. People would ask me for my wristwatch. Could I have your wristwatch? And I got a very clever answer for them. I said, you know... My mother gave me this wristwatch, and they understood that.
Yeah.
It was a family thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a souvenir, kinium, they used to call it. It was a souvenir that they understood why I wouldn't want to part with it, because my mother gave it to me. My mother hadn't given it to me, but I found that was an answer to tell them, and they would quit pestering me. You know, so.
Either that or just buy the cheapest Timexes you can get your hands on.
Yeah.
You know, and that could cut it off too. Yeah. When they see what kind of junk you have.
Yes. Yes.
You mentioned also, this I think probably resulted from your trip last year. You mentioned something about repercussions against Vietnamese who worked with Americans.
Mr. Chun, that I've mentioned earlier on, who was our Vietnamese assistant.
Yes.
He arranged to find houses for us. He arranged to have our cars fixed. He was the interpreter we might need occasionally. He found the maid. He found the cook. He was a hard-working man, and he was very honest, which was something really unusual, I suppose. I'm not saying that all Vietnamese were... crooked, but there were so many things that...
It's a society at war.
Yeah, it was a society at war, and people were trying to get what they could, and you can't blame them, I guess. But Mr. Chun was, Pham Van Chun, was a very trustworthy person, and I think it hurt me most. He was the person that hurt me most when I left the country in April. That I had to leave behind, I suppose you might say,
mm-hmm.
because I knew he had no way out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And things then kind of went downhill even further. And when the country fell, I always wondered, you know, what happened to him? Well, he was fingered as having worked with Americans. He wasn't tortured or anything like that, but I think something equally as bad, he is to this day being discriminated against because of his past connection with Americans. He will go apply for a job, and when there's this grapevine again, everybody seems to know that he's a marked person, and he will not get a good job.
Despite all the joint venture stuff, he can't get a job with an international corporation?
This is changing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard some comments that people like this who know English, again, now are in demand, or if they know how to work with Americans, they're in demand.
Mm-hmm.
So this might change, but he wanted so badly to get a vehicle, a truck, so he could be a truck driver and haul things on the road. And,
mm-hmm.
and when Jerry Klewer was over there last year, he found Chun in Kentucky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what Chun is doing. He has a job of some kind, but it pays very little. Chun, in the meantime, has gotten married and has like 7 or 8 children.
He must be fairly old now.
He is. He's older. He's maybe my age. Maybe a little bit younger. Maybe he's a little older. I don't know. Maybe he's close to 60. I can't mm-hmm. recall. But he wanted money. He wanted a loan. He needed $1,500. And Jerry wrote me a letter saying, would you want to contribute some money? Chun sees it as a loan. And I said, yes, I can help out.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard anything from Jerry since. This was at Christmas time, and now it's August. So I don't know. I suppose I should call Jerry and find out what's going on. Jerry evidently wrote letters to other people who knew Chun and maybe just didn't get enough response. It's too bad. This fellow evidently lied for us.
In what way?
There were evidently people, and I only read this once in Jerry's letter. It's in Jerry's letter. Evidently, there were people who came asking questions about us. Maybe they were VC, I don't
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And Chun covered up for us. I don't know how or what, but it's a possibility that we owe our lives to the man. I don't know. And so, you know, can't we do something for him?
Yeah.
A
few $100.
Yeah, I have offered. And I'll have to check with Jerry to see if anything has happened on him. So.
Yeah. So he's definitely marked. Of course, his association was very close.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he lived at our house.
Mm-hmm.
He lived at the IVS house.
Yeah.
So, and you can't, in a country that size, you can't escape from, I guess, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not anonymous. Everybody knows everything about everybody, especially when it's to their advantage.
If only to make someone else disadvantage.
You. Yes, that's right. Put yourself above them or whatever.
Yeah, or tear them down a bit.
Yeah.
But this kind of repercussion wouldn't extend to like some of the people who were trying to learn English at the time to get a better job, would it?
I'm guessing anybody who worked for USAID or Cords or the military or whatever, mm-hmm. and there were some very good paying jobs for Vietnamese at the time, are probably all marked. A lot of these people, I'm sure, have left the country and probably
as well,
live
yeah.
now in the United States or mm-hmm. elsewhere, fearing that if and when the country fell or thereafter the boat people, those are people who are escaping.
Yeah.
But there were some that were left behind, certainly, like Chun.
Yeah, so yeah, who could not have made it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. I had another sheet here. Hang on just a moment. Yeah, I had another sheet, not of questions from your your yellow sheet, mm-hmm. but just kind of general ones. And okay. some we've already touched on, actually. But now one question, general, is after so many years since the end of your term of service, what do you now think of IBS as an organization?
I still feel the same way as I did before. I respect the organization and what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm happy that it's being led by Don, with all the experience he's had as a volunteer, and I think in other organizations. I haven't had a chance to talk with any recent volunteers, I guess, but from what I read in their publications, I think they must be doing a fairly good job out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know they've had some financial problems. They've had to cut back on, I know, their building and maybe some of their staff and whatnot. But I think, from what I gather, that's all kind of been taken in stride, and they're doing okay. I know there's quite a bit of money comes from alumni.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one time last year it was being matched. So that was double the amount for the effort of the alumni.
Right, anyway, right.
So, okay. I still have a very positive view of the organization and what they're attempting to do.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Good. The other questions following from that were, do you get the newsletter? Obviously you do, because you just mentioned it.
Yes.
And earlier you mentioned that you do contribute money.
Yes.
We're just seeing, you know, how far the expressions of favor would go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
You know, not trying to hit up interviewees to contribute.
Right. Right.
But just to see what's going on. Looking back, rather than now, you know, dealing with IBS as it is today, what do you think, how would you say what IBS's mission was back when you were a volunteer? If you had to write a mission statement in terms of the philosophy of the organization.
What is their mission?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. We just sat and argued at work over a mission statement.
Oh, no. I'm revisiting
and,
this.
They came up, the boss finally came up with one, and I kind of read it and snickered, and because every day I see it violated, and I want to take it and put it in people's faces, and I hate mission statements. IBS is doing work in underdeveloped countries in trying to improve the lives of the poorer strata, I suppose, of those societies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to do it with people who are dedicated, I suppose, to helping others. And I'm hoping that they're screening these people very carefully. I'm sure they are.
Mm-hmm. This is when you were in the organization.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, are we talking then or now?
Then.
Yes. Well, I had a very naive, I guess, idea when I went into IBS about saving the world. A lot of people did in those days. And I think we've become more cynical now about whether we can save the world the way, the direction it's going. I think overpopulation, depletion of natural resources and all that, I think it's kind of, the direction we're going is kind of hopeless. Disease, new diseases. Wow. I'm not trying to paint a black picture here, but if things continue the way they are, I don't know. I don't see a lot of hope for a lot of countries, underdeveloped countries. Geez, Africa, the size of the families. Some of the Asian countries, I mean, you got to have 8, 9, 10 children. I mean, how many people can we support on this planet? Well, something's got to be done. China has been attempting to do something, you know, limiting the families to 1 or 2 children or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be working somewhat. Japan and the United States, I don't know what the birth rates are, but I think they're down around, Japan's is down around 0, isn't it?
It's
less than?
Would be approaching negative.
Negative, okay.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen if Asia, some of the Asian countries in Africa and South America, the people who are so very poor continue to have huge families? How mm-hmm. are we going to feed all these people? And in a lot of cases, they're just not educated. Wow, I don't see it. I don't know.
So you are painting a black picture.
I am painting a black picture, but you asked me the question, but I don't dwell on this all the time. I know, you try not to think about negative things, but.
Mm-hmm.
But what good did IVS do in Vietnam?
Well, that would be the second part. You know, like what was their mission statement or goals? You know, and then how close did they come to achieving?
We wanted to make life better for those people. We wanted to dig wells. We wanted to improve their crops and their livestock. I always did question whether we should send teachers to teach them English. But in those days, I guess maybe you were helping part of the population do better.
The international business community needs,
yes, I guess,
English speakers, and that way you get corporations to settle in, to give jobs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of a save the world attitude, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So how close did IVS get to these goals?
I think we did very, I think we had some very good volunteers. Some of them were just real bundles of energy and mm-hmm. went out and did a lot of work. And there are others, I think, that came there and whiled away their time
mm-hmm.
and probably didn't do much. Maybe they couldn't do much. Maybe their situation was such that the people weren't receptive or they didn't know how to do for the people what they were expected to do, and they weren't helped, maybe by IBS. They weren't trained. Maybe they had the wrong attitude. I don't know. But there were some very good volunteers, and I think IBS succeeded in the names of some of those people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you cannot screen everyone
to
and know
yeah.
exactly what dwells inside them and what keeps them going and what... it's like interviewing people for a job.
Oh, no, it is.
Yeah, some are very good at interviewing for jobs, and then they can't. They can't perform.
Right, right. Yeah, and I know we've gone through a lot of interviews in my own workplace recently. And we're getting to be pretty good at weeding out people, but still at a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Looking at your own life as it is today, how much do you credit the IBS experience for having made you the person that you are now?
Lots, very much. An experience like I had, I think everyone in this country should go see a prison, experience a prison. I think everyone in this country should go to another country and see poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And they would maybe look on their fellow persons a little bit differently or be a little more compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
They would also know how good we have it here. I'm not one to go around and wave the flag, I guess, but I don't think there is a better place to live than here. I've been away from it several times, and when you come back, you think, you know, this is kind of nice. On the other hand, I guess if you want to look at it from another direction, what right do we have to use up all the natural resources of the world for our style of living? I don't know. Yeah, I can look at all sides of a question and not really come up with an answer. So it has enabled me to look at people objectively, maybe. I've had to work with the Vietnamese in particular. You never really quite knew what they were thinking. Their concept of time, we mentioned earlier, was completely different from ours. And you had to learn to accept people and their culture. You had to learn to change, to adapt to people of another culture. I think that's all a valuable experience in give and take, being able to adjust,
mm-hmm.
to look at a question from different points of view. You become very good observers of people and mm-hmm. readers of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been valuable, probably, in my work. You learn how to handle people a little bit better. You become more tolerant of other people's beliefs. It's just made you a better person, rounded. Okay.
Now, all of these things are personal rather than a shift in your job occupation, but you are now doing what you had trained
mm-hmm.
to do.
Mm-hmm.
The IBS experience was more of a personal makeup or makeover or modification
mm-hmm.
rather than change in career, going from English literature to agronomy or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've learned to handle people better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I travel in northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin and visit customers, and I deal a lot with rural people.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a rural area.
Right.
I think the experience in Vietnam in people being willing to accept new things or not accept new things has helped me probably in trying to sell or show new ways of doing things to our customers in rural areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
'Cause I've experienced that before, not only in Vietnam, certainly.
Yeah.
So that's Yeah, that's helped, certainly.
And certainly you've been somewhat active here with other former volunteers. You mentioned that you enjoy, sir.
Yes.
The ones to put on local reunions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've been right. Going to the national reunions when they've occurred.
Mm-hmm. IVS people, in general, seem to be very independent people.
Mm-hmm.
I made the comment, I think, in something I wrote in the IVS book, that at our 35th reunion, I sat there and they had made up a schedule of what's going to happen, which hours, and it seemed to me that the people didn't care
what was in the schedule,
what was going on. They didn't come on time, they didn't, you know, respond, and I just thought, that's because IVS people are that way. They probably joined IVS because they were independent thinkers and they knew maybe kind of what they wanted to do that was different from anybody else or what other people in general do, to go, you know, leave your country for 2 years and then experience a different culture. And that's quite an undertaking.
Oh, yes.
And I think IVS and Peace Corps probably draws that kind of people. And so at the reunion, here they are trying to organize these people and they don't want to organize. And I made the comment in there that I felt sorry for IVS Washington and for people who were trying to later on to organize the reunion, because it's kind of an impossible task.
Well, have you ever heard the Harvard Law of Human Behavior?
What's that?
It goes that under carefully controlled conditions, human beings will behave as they damn well please.
I love it. Yes. Just when you figure you think you've got somebody figured out, they do something completely different.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, and perhaps the IVS group are just a little more on that part of the continuum than most.
I do that on purpose sometimes. A couple restaurants maybe that I eat breakfast in. Mm-hmm. Just when the waitress thinks she has, I on principle do not eat the same breakfast 2 mornings in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm that way. I don't want to appear to be a person of predictability, of mm-hmm. habit. So I'll go into the restaurant and she says, one egg over medium and whole wheat toast and orange juice. I'll say, no, today I think I'll have such and such. And I kind of like to do that. Remain unpredictable.
Poor waitresses.
Yes, right. So.
Now, in this... I guess 2.5 hours almost that we've had this mm-hmm. on, with a few pauses.
Okay.
We've gone through, you know, basically your life through IBS
mm-hmm.
and all of the influences and some of the high points there. And any major areas of your experience that I might not have known to ask a question about?
In Vietnam, do you mean?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear a little bit about Dave Gittleson? Or you got
all
enough
right.
on that?
No. Fine. I'd love to.
I didn't know the man really well.
Mm-hmm.
I had a...
You made allusions to him, but I
yeah,
didn't know
Dave,
if you felt, well...
As I mentioned, Dave
well
was known
to
in Vietnam as the poor American.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived way out in the provinces, and his existence was the kind that I pictured myself having when I was sitting in Washington listening to all these cultural people,
mm-hmm.
Acculturation people.
Yeah,
I pictured myself living in a grass hut out in the middle of a rice paddy somewhere.
Dressing in Vietnamese clothes
yes,
and such.
Yes, immersing myself completely. And that was not the case with IVS in Vietnam in general. Dave was one who was an exception.
Mm-hmm.
And I never He came through IBS Kanta a few times, and that's when I ever met him. He was what I would call a loner, maybe. Mm-hmm. He didn't associate with other IBSers very well or very much. Mm-hmm. When he spoke, he was extremely serious, had some very, and I can't tell you what his opinions were, but he had some very strong ideas about working in Vietnam and how it should be done. Mm-hmm. And I always felt a little uncomfortable around him because I think he was very, very intelligent, and sometimes I can't deal with people.
It was intimidating.
They're kind of intimidating.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't that I guess I ever avoided him, but I didn't feel real comfortable around him, and it's not his fault or anything. Mm-hmm. But I saw him come through a couple times. I think he was detained by the military in Kanta. Mm-hmm. The way he was dressed, they thought maybe he was a military person who was not dressed.
Oh, it was the American military that stopped him?
Yes, and then he would have to get a hold of someone at the IBS house.
Okay.
So, and then he would kind of hang his head and, oh, here we go again, you know. And he put up with it. I don't think he ever really fought back. Mm-hmm. He was kind of
at least peaceful
man that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was kind of a shock then, of course, when we learned what happened to him. I really can't tell you much more about him, I guess. I had tremendous respect for him and his ideals, I guess. And I think, didn't he want to become a doctor?
I don't
know. Or get into the medical profession?
Possibly. Yeah. I hadn't heard that, but it's, you know, could very well be.
And as far as the lady who called, talked to several IBSers about writing an article on him, I have never heard from her again. And never got an article which she said she'd send. So maybe she never finished it, I don't know.
I suspect she probably never finished
maybe
it.
Maybe not, yeah.
It sounds to me as though she may have been a freelancer.
Yeah.
Who thought that she had a good case.
Yeah.
But needed a smoking gun.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she didn't find what she thought she wanted.
Yeah, or, you know, that she could substantiate for an expose.
Right.
Kinds of things. I mean, all of the possibilities that we ran through earlier about the pipe bomb and Kennedy and Gettleson, mm-hmm. was it American, was it VC, was it Arvin, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all a bunch of speculation.
Right.
And that's probably what she couldn't write up.
Couldn't sort out at all.
Yeah, yeah. And pin down and expose somebody specific.
Nobody will probably ever know. So.
That's right, and no one will ever know. I think we will probably write about it, but within the context that we will never know.
John,
but this is how bad the situation could be that something like this could happen.
John Balaban, in his book, writes about going back to Vietnam not too long ago, and he mm-hmm. went to that district mm-hmm. where Dave had been killed and asked questions, mm-hmm. and nobody could tell him anything.
Would or couldn't?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I might be seeing Balaban.
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, I live close enough, but Florida is a long way down.
It's a long state, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to be seeing some people in Jacksonville, but that's just over the border for me.
Right.
I'm going to have to reread the book to see, because, you know, maybe everything is there. I could just send him an email or a letter and, you know, get a clarification here and there.
He goes on at some length toward the end of the book about that, but he doesn't come up with any conclusions.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he sent in his yellow form and said, look, I think you should just read the book, and if there's anything more, then give me a contact. I think he doesn't want to waste our time. Mm-hmm. What is your impression of Balaban?
That was another man that made me uncomfortable.
Again, because of this intellectuality?
Yes. John and I got along quite well.
Mm-hmm.
John did not get along with Bill Sorrell.
Hmm.
John did not get along with Jerry Cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
There were arguments that would develop at the dinner table. And I can't tell you what they were over.
Uh-huh.
But John was very opinionated. And quite often, I got caught in the center of arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And John wasn't there very long. He was only there like for 6 months. I was with John the day he got wounded during the Tet Offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea he was keeping a journal about what was going on every day.
But he was keeping a Butte.
Yes, very nice. Mm-hmm. And he went with a group called CORE, Committee of Responsibility, and went back to, he was back in Vietnam within a couple months after uh-huh. he was wounded and came home, IVSN home.
Yeah.
But he was a conscientious objector, and so he had time to spend. He had to spend.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went with CORE, and that was acceptable to do. And probably saw worse things than any of the others of us did as far as the war and its results on children in particular.
Who in particular?
Children.
Oh, children, I'm sorry.
He went to Vietnam. The CORE was a group consisting of doctors and hospitals in this country who agreed to do operations and medical patch-ups on children who had been wounded. Was it had been wounded by the war,
mm-hmm.
or were there some other things like genetic type things? I'm not sure.
Okay.
But he went over there as a liaison to pick out these children, and so he saw some of the very worst. If that man doesn't have nightmares, I don't know who would. And then, after he was done with them, I got a letter from him when he was in CORE. I can't recall. I just ran across it here not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't remembered ever getting it until I saw it, and I thought, oh. We didn't communicate at all until, it must have been about 2 years ago, it was about the 20th of December, this package comes in the mail from Florida, and it was his book.
Mm. Oh, he sent you a copy.
And he said, wrote a note in it and said, please read this. If you want to, or if you have time, or whatever, and let me know what you think. And he was a little bit worried, I think, about accuracy.
Yeah.
And if he had told everything correctly. And who was I to ask 30 years later? I remember general things happening.
And probably also responsibility. I don't think he wanted to misrepresent anyone.
Yeah.
I know that I have certainly felt a tremendous amount of responsibility as more and more people, such as yourself, have told their stories,
mm-hmm.
have given their insights, and you know, you want to represent everyone as fairly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't get into a lot of specifics, mm-hmm. to include the range of opinion and political perspectives, and,
mm-hmm.
and just fairly, you know, in a balance.
I am not a political person. So people would sit and argue about the war, and I just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't particularly agree with what we were doing there, but I thought, what good is it going to do me to yell at people, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm just here doing my own little thing. So John was one who was very opinionated that way, and Dan Vining was too. So they'd sit and talk about those things. I sat and thought about the rice farmers, I guess. What was going on out in the countryside.
Gosh. Well, I think we've covered a great deal then.
Good.
And
I feel there's some things that I haven't told you, but I don't know what they are. There are things that I probably came to mind while I was trying to answer some of your comments and questions, and then they slipped away,
yeah.
And then I thought, well, I'll tell you that later, and then I didn't.
Yeah.
There were times I think I was foolhardy there. I remember one time in particular, I was downtown in Kanta on the waterfront, and there was some kind of a holiday or celebration, and I went to a little outdoor restaurant, and there were a couple of Vietnamese soldiers came and joined me, and we got to visiting, and they suggested that we go and visit one of their friends or one of their family. Evidently they wanted to show me off or something, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And we got there, I think we walked there, it was outside of town, but we walked there and we went way back in thatched huts and canals, palm trees. The one fellow took me in and introduced me to some people. And these people were not happy to see me. I could tell. And I got this uneasy feeling that these people are another political persuasion here, I think, than what I think they could have been, should have been. And I felt...
But this was an Arvin soldier.
Well, who knows?
Well, they had the uniform.
They had the uniform on, but who knows?
Uh-huh.
At night, maybe they were somebody else. Who knows?
Yeah, okay.
That's the way things were there. The families, sometimes they had some people fighting on one side and some on the other. Or if the Viet Cong came through, they were fighting for them, and when the other government troops came through, they were fighting for them. I mean, you sway, like they say, sway with the wind.
Yeah.
So that you can stay alive. And I remember after being there a while, and I don't remember how the conversation went, and I wasn't that fluent in Vietnamese, I guess, at that time. I decided that we should get out of there, because I may never be land, end up in a canal somewhere, you know? And nobody knew I was there.
Right. You had just gone off.
So there were some things like that I did that were dumb. I also found out about a week after I arrived at my station that the fellow that I was replacing had been killed in a ambush right south of town.
Who was that?
Can't recall his name. And that then, here I am the first week at my station, and I find out that it's not safe to be out on the road after 4:15 or so in the afternoon, 4:30. And then I find out that the guy that I'm replacing was ambushed and killed. Fred? Was it Fred's name? it'll come to me. And so you kind of tuck this away in your mind, and you, I suppose you kind of doubt or wonder what you were getting into.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, I was younger at that time, and I was optimistic.
And then you just blithely go off with a couple of soldiers.
You sort of just do your own thing.
Oh, sure, I'll go with you, yeah. Whoever the hell you
are. Oh, this will be an adventure.
Yeah. But they got the guns.
Yes. I don't know how many IVSers lost their lives in Laos and Vietnam. I'm guessing there must be a dozen or 15.
In both Laos and Vietnam? Mm-hmm. Not quite that many.
No. Some of them were accidents, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there was a drowning, and there was
a drowning, and maybe a car accident.
There was an airplane accident, things like that. But
there were others that were outright.
Mm-hmm.
There is a fellow that I met who is in Denver. In fact, I stayed with him. When we had our reunion in Washington, the IVS Washington people opened up their homes and said, you know, don't go to hotels. If you want to stay at somebody's place, it won't cost you. And so I was put up with this fellow. And he was from Denver. I can't remember his name. He was having real problems. Yet.
Uh-huh.
And it went back to some incident in the countryside in Vietnam somewhere. And he has flashbacks. It involves helicopters going over. He was with some Vietnamese farmers out in a rice paddy, and some American helicopters came over.
Mm-hmm.
And
he was Vietnam, not Laos.
He was in Vietnam,
okay.
I think. And
mm-hmm.
he relives that. He could have been, I don't know how he was dressed, he could have been, they all could have been mistaken for VC. They all could have been shot.
Let me pause this and I'll tell you the names of some people in this list who live in Colorado.
Okay.
Okay, I've got this back on again, and I think we probably have covered a great deal now.
Okay.
And so, we went through the list and had the likely suspect for your other story. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. And if I think of further things, I'll get in touch with you. And if you remember something, like, oh yes.
Okay.
But in the meantime, it's getting late.
Mm. Let's not do it.
Well, okay, but we've been at it a good time. So thank you much. Click.